We're told it was 12 years ago that the art dealer Robert Simon took a sorry-looking painting wrapped, incredibly, in a bin liner to the New York home of his friends, the art restorers Diane and Mario Modestini. The work was clearly damaged and obscured by clumsy overpainting, but Mario was still impressed. He thought it could well be a painting by a Leonardo follower. Diane agreed and began cleaning the painting that night. The former director of the Met, Tom Campbell, has said, inch for inch, conservator Diane Modestini must be among the most highly valued living artists in the world. Ms. Modestini is hugely respected in her field. She has said that she tried not to think about the significance of what she was working on during the six-year restoration, all the while coming to believe with more and more conviction that the painting was truly by Leonardo himself. People say, "How can you touch it? It's so scary," she said in an interview. "I wasn't frightened of it in those ways, that it's one of 16 paintings, it's worth X amount of dollars, because I would have been paralyzed. I wouldn't have been able to work like that." Ms. Modestini worked slowly and painstakingly, having to make nerve-jangling retouches to badly damaged areas, including Christ's eyes and lips. She said she wanted to be sure that none of my restorations had impinged on the original, that I had not done too much, because old pictures have to look old. If you take out every crack, every spot, every anomaly, they can easily look like a reproduction. When she finally finished conserving the work, Ms. Modestini, a professor at the Conservation Center of New York University, admitted it felt like a painful breakup. She suffered separation anxiety. "I'm quite serious. It was a very intense picture, and I felt a whole slipstream of artistry and genius and some sort of otherworldliness that I'll never experience again." That from an article in The Guardian by Hannah Ellis Peterson and Mark Brown. In November 2017, Leonardo da Vinci's Salvator Mundi painting sold at auction for $450 million, making it the world's most expensive painting. As we've just heard, Diane Modestini is the conservator who cleaned, restored, and preserved the painting, and part of the team responsible for authentication. After years of work and research, Christie's Auction House sold the painting to Abu Dhabi, where it will be the cornerstone of their new museum, the Louvre Abu Dhabi, and be available to the public. Until its sale, Salvator Mundi was thought to be the last painting of only 20 by Leonardo da Vinci in private hands. Ms. Modestini will deliver the SAMIC Distinguished Lecture this Thursday, March 1st, at 6 p.m. on the Bucknell University campus in Lewisburg. She will discuss the 10-year process it took to reveal the masterpiece once thought lost. Prior to her lecture, she will be completing conservation treatments in the SAMIC Gallery on the Kress Collection. Visitors are welcome during that time to see conservation in action. We had a chance to speak with Diane Modestini by phone before her visit to Bucknell. We began by asking her when she saw a Leonardo with her own eyes for the very first time.
I think that the first Leonardos that I saw were from his very early period, first of all. And I don't know if I first saw the Ginevra da Vinci in Washington or if it was the Leonardos in Florence. I think possibly it was the Leonardos in Florence.
Were you drawn in at that time when you saw those works?
Well, I was very young.
You probably didn't envision that you would be doing what you were doing the past decade.
No, not in my wildest dreams, no.
I was curious about what in your growing up years might have prepared you temperamentally to do this major project.
Well, growing up, I was a very shy, very kind of bookish child. I spent most of my time reading, and perhaps that was temperamentally helpful, you know, in the way I reacted to works of art when I eventually got to know them.
And what was the path to the visual arts and painting in your life? How did you then get into the world of studying painting?
I really didn't study paintings or know very much about them until I went to college. I went to Barnard College in 1964, and I took some art history classes. It was an excellent department at Barnard College, and I very quickly fell in love with Italian painting. We went, especially the Metropolitan Museum, of course, where I later worked. But one of my professors regularly held classes there, and we were constantly going there and to the Museum of Modern Art and to the Frick Collection to look at paintings and, you know, write reports and just see exhibitions. And New York was obviously a very rich place to study art.
When you do the studying of art history as you did and going to the museums and having the classes right there, do we get a sense that painters and people of the time looked differently at the world than we do? Is it actually a function of seeing differently?
Certainly. You know, we can only sort of dimly imagine how people felt, the lives they lived, the thoughts they had on a daily basis and from 500 years ago. And in fact, paintings are one way of letting people, modern-day people, have a glimpse into that past, probably the most accessible way that, you know, that we can know what people thought and what they wore and their beliefs, all sorts of things from, you know, many years ago.
So did you find yourself trying to at least imagine yourself in that frame of mind as you conducted this project?
Well, yes, by the time I worked on the Leonardo, I had spent, you know, over 40 years studying old master paintings and spending time in Europe, primarily in Italy. And so I did, of course, know something about Leonardo without being by any means an expert, but I knew something about Leonardo's life and the period in which he painted this picture. And I, yes, of try to always, when you're restoring a painting, you have to try to put yourself, you know, as close to the artist's mind as you can, especially when the picture is very damaged.
And did you have a mentor, a restoration mentor? It seems like you could have skills taught, but in terms of philosophy and approach, was there someone you looked to or someone whose example you might have followed for those kinds of questions?
Well, I've been very lucky because I had two great mentors, actually. One was the head of the department at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, of the Paintings Conservation Department, where I worked for 13 years, and his name was John Brealey. He was an English restorer, and he was very brilliant and very articulate. And then, when I left the Met, actually the reason I left was because I met my husband, Mario Modestini, who was perhaps the greatest restorer of the 20th century of Italian paintings. And he was Italian and had lived in Rome up until, you know, that he was a mature adult. And I learned about many, many things from Mario. He was a great man. And I just wrote a book. I just published a book about him that I've been working on for at least a decade, which is based in part on some of his stories and recollections. And coincidentally, the recent sale of the Salvator Mundi and the final stages of the publication of my book about Mario coincided. So, yes, I couldn't have restored the Leonardo without what I learned from Mario in particular.
Can you tell us the title of the book?
Yes, it's called Masterpieces.
How did he look at and how do you look at your role in this work?
Well, the great pitfall of being a restorer, particularly when you deal with damaged pictures, as and many of old master pictures, even very important ones, have been damaged through the centuries, and is to take your own personality out of the situation altogether and just try to understand what the painter was trying to do, what he was trying to convey, and not to do too much. This is always, always the hardest part of a restoration, is knowing when to stop before you actually begin to add an interpretation that is your own and not the artist's. And this can happen in very subtle ways.
And so you look to the artist to guide you. You look to what's there to guide you. And again, as you have said, your knowledge going into a project of the artist's body of work. I don't mean in a spooky way, but there are clues that are right there before you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, in the case of the Salvatore Mundi, although it's very badly damaged, most of the damage is in the head. But the passages that are not damaged have all of their layers, all of the paint layers that Leonardo applied to develop this modeling and the expression of the eyes. That information was there. If it hadn't been, if, for example, the damage was that the final paint layers had been removed by a strong cleaning in the past, for example, I wouldn't have been able to restore it.
So it wasn't a foregone conclusion until you saw that those layers were there.
Well, once I saw it, yes, then I knew that it was possible to, yes, it was possible to do something with it that reflected the artist's original intention in important ways. I didn't have to invent anything, and that's, you know, if you're serious about restoration, that is where you really have to draw the line, is when you just decide to come up with something entirely on your own, which is what was done in the past. In the 19th century, the restorers were often painters. Sometimes they were very good painters, and they didn't hesitate to just rework an entire picture so that it became as much theirs as it was by the original artist.
You have told the story, I know, so many times, but for our audience who might not be familiar, can you just give us a little sense of what it must have been like when you discovered that you really believed that this was Leonardo's work?
Well, it was very, you know, I had a moment when I realized that it was, for me, unequivocally by Leonardo, and I had no doubts or questions about that, which was, luckily for me, it was toward the very end of the restoration. But before that, of course, I was working with the owner, who's an art dealer, and he's also an art historian named Robert Simon, and he's an expert in Renaissance painting. And Robert had been studying all of the versions and copies of this picture, and there was technical analysis, and we knew that it was very close to Leonardo. And I think that Robert actually had concluded that it was by Leonardo before I did.
And we learn about certain things that were characteristic of Leonardo, like the heel of the hand. And we've read about the little clues, the underpainting, the pentimenti, and those things that art historians recognize. But that's not ultimately the only thing that the keys that give you the sense. They're those details, but there's some holistic clicking into place.
That's exactly right. There was a lot of technical evidence, and it's very interesting to have it, and it can inform your understanding of the way the painting was made, but the actual realization of the hand of the artist who's involved always comes down to connoisseurship. People like to think that science can give you the answers, but it can't. And naturally, connoisseurship is somewhat subjective, but there are lots of tools and clues, as you said, in terms of the handling, the draftsmanship, and chiefly also by comparison with other paintings by the artist that are securely documented. In the case of Leonardo, of course, there are very few paintings. So it was really, for me, it was comparing the handling of the flesh tones with some high-resolution reproductions of the Mona Lisa that gave me that epiphany, you know, one evening. So, yes, there's a whole that has to be understood, and not just technical details.
You are a reader, and you were a reader very young. And we know that if we read a Tolstoy novel, that the way Tolstoy fashions the characters and has them interrelate and the setting of the scenes and so forth, we get a wonderful story, of course. But we also might get a sense of Tolstoy himself, just clues, just hints. Working so long with a piece like this, did you ever have a sense of getting a glimpse into what Leonardo might have been like?
Yes, I think that in this painting, which he worked on for a long time, as he did many of his pictures, he tried to incorporate into this image of Jesus Christ his understanding of human nature, nature itself, the universe, the essence of whatever it was that he understood by the divine. I think he was, because he was as much a scientist as he was an artist, he had thought, I think, long and carefully about the nature of the universe and the extraordinary power of this image reflects his understanding of something that is beyond human understanding. For me, it's the only painting that's an image of Jesus Christ or anyone else's God that gives some sense in Western art, that gives some sense of this unknowable power of time that has no beginning and no end, and of the universality, the connection of everything in the universe.
That takes your breath away, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. It's such a compelling picture for that reason. And people who haven't spent as much time with it as I did and haven't had as much time to think about it are nonetheless frequently moved to tears by the picture. And not out of any sentimental reasons. It's just that the power of the image is so overwhelming that they're in awe in front of it. And that Christie's actually made a very interesting film in which they put a camera on the frame of the picture, and a camera that recorded the reactions of visitors looking at the picture. And they put it on their website. It's called The World is Watching. And you don't see the painting at all. You just see the faces of the people looking at it. And you see all kinds of different emotions. You see awe and fear and tears, and I don't know of another painting like it in Western art.
And the fascinating thing is that you know it more intimately than anyone, because you've lived with it and worked on it and studied it close up, but I'm sure you still can't explain how there's a mystery there, how there's a presence there.
It's something you have to experience. And I'm so glad that it is going to go to a museum, because, you know, it had disappeared for many years, and it now will be available. Of course, not everyone will be able to go to Abu Dhabi, but I hope that, and I'm sure that it will now, you know, be able to travel and to be loaned to exhibitions, to be studied, for, you know, excellent images to be made of it that can be diffused so that everyone can have some experience of this.
This is such a remarkable feat, and there's such a humility as you express what it is you've done, a humility before the genius of Leonardo and the extraordinary power of the image.
Well, I did the best I could. It's not perfect. You know, I'm glad that my work was good enough so that people can experience the painting in the way that they do. But, you know, it's kind of the tragedy of the restorer, that you are so aware of how much has been lost. You know, I would so love to see the painting when Leonardo finished it, before it was damaged. I suspect it was damaged quite early on. So I did the best I could.
When you come to Bucknell, then you'll talk about the process and the project. But did I understand that you might actually be doing some demonstrations?
Oh, no. We are coming with my Crest Fellow, Sean Kwong, who's And we're also there to do some ordinary maintenance on some of the crest paintings, many of which are on panel, and there are a number of them that began to flake because the humidity went too low for a period. So that's all we're doing, and it's not a demonstration. We're just setting down little bits of paint with glue and bits of paper and weights. That's all.
Diane Modestini, the conservator who cleaned, restored, and preserved Leonardo da Vinci's Salvator Mundi. Ms. Modestini will deliver the Samick Distinguished Lecture this Thursday, March 1st at 6 p.m. on the Bucknell University campus in Lewisburg. Prior to her lecture, she will be completing conservation treatments in the Samick Gallery on the Crest Collection, and visitors are welcome during that time to see conservation in action. That's the Samick Distinguished Lecture by Diane Modestini, Thursday, March 1st at 6 p.m. in the Gallery Forum on the second floor of the Elaine Langone Center on the Bucknell University campus in Lewisburg. For more information, on the web, bucknell.edu, bucknell.edu.